Hey backstage, this is Dom Bombadil, and I am going to try and do the Talk Nerdy to Me challenge posted by Queer Jacket. So I just got back from work and I thought, hey, why not just record a quick video? Although I do not know how quick this video will be because I try to rant and ramble a lot, so we'll see. Also, disclaimer, I may have smoked a joint after coming back, so yay, high rambles. Whatever, it's 420. That's what I tell myself every day. Anyway, getting back to the challenge. So, the topic that I decided was astronomy, and there's two reasons for that. The first one is that I have just always been very infatuated by the whole the night sky, and this have this incredible thirst of, you know, knowing where you come from and what's the meaning of all this and, you know, all the jazz. And astronomy is a very humbling subject because it requires you to... It's not just knowledge. For me, it's a very humbling experience because it gives me a perspective of where we are, like how big things are out there. And it just shatters the whole egocentrical viewpoint on humanity and Earth and solar system. It tells you that there's so much more to it, and I really like that. And the second reason is because I feel like I am quite knowledgeable about this, because I almost got my astronomy minor in college. I say almost because college didn't allow me to take... Well, it wouldn't allow me to go over my credit limits, so I couldn't take my last two classes. So basically what I'm saying is I got rejected my astronomy degree because I was too nerdy. But let's see. Okay, before I begin, I just want to preface this talk. Well, okay, first of all, I hope that everyone, whoever listens to this, learned something, because it's really cool, you know, like, You might end up knowing maybe two or three facts that you could share with friends that just blow their minds. It's fun. And I would like to preface this whole talk by saying something that, well, I took a class called Unsolved Mysteries of the Universe, and it was amazing and taught me something, like, the professor taught me something that I will hold really near and dear to my heart, and it's about scientific method and how you should be skeptical. And not just like, you know, not just skeptical, but what was most humbling is that, especially with scientists, we need to be especially skeptical about things that we are biased towards. So let's say, you know, I am the person who proposed the idea of inflation, the Big Bang Theory, and I'm working on proving it. So of course I want it to happen, you know. It's my baby. I want this to be true. I want this to be validated. But at the same time, I got to be more skeptical about this because I am biased towards it. And that's what science is, and that's why it's so beautiful, because it is completely unbiased opinions. It is true whether or not you believe in it, well, whether you believe in it or not, as Neil deGrasse Tyson would say. So let's get started. I think I'm going to just go through these slides I have. It's much easier to keep my thoughts centered, and we'll talk about black holes, because, you know, black holes are cool. They're like that hip kid on the internet from astronomy that always gets talked about, and movies being made about it. So let's talk about it. It's a pretty famous guy. So what is a black hole, you'd say? It's funny because I love the way astronomers name things. There's actually an XKCD post where they talk about something like... there's actually a telescope called a Very Large Telescope and the Extremely Large Telescope. So they just name things as they are, you know. And it was called a black hole because it was a hole and it was black when they first tried to observe something like that. And the reason that is because, as we all know, that light cannot escape a black hole. So when you're trying to image it, when you're trying to look at it, so any light rays, any photons that are they're basically going and trying to be reflected back towards us, so we can see it, are not coming back because they're just being pulled in, because there's so intense and so much gravity in this one single entity that even light cannot escape it, which is the fastest thing in the world. So that's a black hole, and they're quite common. They're not that rare entities. There's pretty much one black hole in every, at the center of every galaxy. That's the core of the galaxy that, you know, keeps it going. There's one at the center of our galaxy, which is called Sagittarius A. It's a pretty awesome black hole, and it is about 4 million solar masses. So here's where things in astronomy get really interesting, and I get really excited to see people's expressions, because we really forget how intense it is out there. It's so crazy big. So we know that the sun is huge. It's massive. Bigger than the planets, bigger than pretty much everything we know in our vicinity. It's the biggest thing. But now I tell you that there is this black hole at the center of our galaxy, which is about 4 million solar masses. That is, when things go into, okay, thousands maybe we can think about it, when things go into millions and billions, I think we lose the sense of perspective, because we are puny humans. We have very limited resources to form a perspective, and it's really hard to imagine something that is 4 million times the size of our sun. So, the most massive black hole to date is about 20 billion times the mass of the sun. So you can just imagine like how crazily big they are. So let's talk about how a black hole is formed, because then I want to talk about what is a black hole. Like, I mean, how big a black hole is. So black holes are formed when stars die. Sad. You know, stars' death gives rise to its circle of life. But the thing is, not every star can be a black hole, so you've got to be special to gain that black hole status. So I pulled this up to get some numbers to you. So if a star is about roughly the same size as our sun, it will not become a black hole. It will basically run out of fuel and result into a white dwarf. Actually, before this, let me tell you how. Okay, so in a star, there are two major forces acting up. One is the gravitational force, which is basically pulling all the gases around that star or in the star towards the core. And the other one is that is going from the core outside. So, and this force is the pressure that is being exerted by the reactions going on inside the core that are producing these gases and light and intense energy. So this gravity and this pressure going outward, well, gravity going inwards and the pressure going outwards, they maintain this very amazing equilibrium, which is called a hydrostatic equilibrium, or, well, gravitational equilibrium, that keeps the star stable, so to say. And what happens is, once the star is getting out of fuel, it's running out of fuel, obviously the pressure is going to go down, right? So the gravity is still acting inwards, but the pressure from these reactions is slowly and steadily dwindling down. So eventually the gravity overpowers the pressure, and the star slowly and steadily starts collapsing on itself. Now, if the star is about the same size as our, well, as the same mass, not the size, basically, same mass as our backyard star, Sun, then it will result in a white dwarf. It will not go something called as electron degeneracy and not also go undergo something called as neutron degeneracy. Now, what are those terms? Let's see. Once the star is collapsing on itself, there will come a point where it cannot collapse more because well, the matter in it is too congested. It's too tightly bound, basically. It cannot do anything. It cannot go further in. But if the star is between 1.44 or 2 or 3 solar masses, then it undergoes something called as electron degeneracy. So the degenerate pressure from electrons fails. So what happens is it eventually all these electrons will eventually come together, merge, and collapse on each other and make it more massive. So basically if the star is massive enough, it will keep on collapsing on its own weight. Now these stars, they will result in a neutron star, which is also very, very massive and very high gravitational entity, but not quite as big as the black hole, though. So now, if there's a star that is over 2 to 3 solar masses, let's say, this star, after undergoing electron degeneracy, it will eventually also start collapsing on itself because of neutron pressure failing. So the neutron pressure is basically not enough to overcome the force of gravity in this case, and it will collapse on itself and will end up resulting in something known as the singularity. Now, a singularity is, how do I explain this? It's basically at the center of the black hole, there is a gravitational singularity, and it is a one-dimensional point that contains just a lot of mass. Like an infinitely small space where density and gravity become infinite. And it's really hard to wrap your brains around it because that's what singularity is. It's fucked up. because at this point, the laws of physics as we know, they just break. They cease to exist. And it's a very, like, there's singularity in math, there's singularity in so many different subjects, but basically that's what it means. It's a huge, in this context, it's a huge amount of mass, just concentrated in a very, very small space, almost one-dimensional space, just like how Big Bang happened. You know, there was nothing, there was just, there was singularity, and then boom, things just exploded. So now you know how a black hole is formed. Let me do a sidebar. So I'll ask you a question. Well, you can't answer me, but I'll pretend that you answer it in your head. So the question is that if I take the sun from the center of the solar system and I replace it with a black hole with equal mass, what will happen? Well, a lot of people think that everything will get sucked in. But no. It's because I'm basically replacing the same thing. I'm replacing my sun with a black hole of the same mass. It's not going to do anything because gravity is not going to change. We'll still live our happy lives. Well, we probably won't because we'll die because there won't be light. So, but planets will not get sucked into this black hole, basically. A black hole becomes a black hole only if it is so massive, well, so much more massive than our sun, that it undergoes all these stages that I told you about and just becomes a whole gravitational force powerhouse. So you might ask, you told me that there was this thing called singularity. So how do we calculate the size of a black hole. Like, is black hole just one-dimensional? The answer is no. The size of the black hole is given by something known as its Schwarzschild radius. Now, this radius is sort of this invisible sphere around the singularity that is a black hole. So this sphere, beyond which, if you go towards the singularity, so basically, if you go beyond this Schwarzschild radius, this invisible force field kind of thing, there's no coming back. It's called the event horizon. Basically, at this point, you cannot escape. Even light cannot escape. And so basically, it's the Schwarzschild radius is the radius at which the escape velocity is the speed of light. So basically, if a ray of light sort of passes and grazes it, it will get sucked in because the escape velocity at this radius is more than the speed of light, which, so basically there's no escape. This is the reason why black holes are black. There is no light reflecting, there's no light coming out, it's all dark. So that is what a singularity is, and that's how big black holes are. Now, let's see, what else can we talk about? Okay, let me do another little sidebar and a question. Oh, yeah, sorry. Let's see. There's this thing called a photon sphere, which is really, really interesting. So let's say there is a light at the photon sphere. Well, okay, so what is a photon sphere? On this Schwarzschild radius where there is no escape, the event horizon. So let's say that there are some rays of light that are passing and some some that are just grazing it. Now, for those rays of light that are just grazing the surface, what will happen is it'll sort of become a photon sphere, sort of like a 360 degrees, a sphere of light. And it's basically, if you're inside of this sphere, you would see the back of your own head because you're practically inside this sphere mirror that is just doing weird things to physics. So if you are in it, you look ahead and you will see the back of your own head. That's really interesting. Now, let's talk about what will happen if you try to enter a black hole. Well, you would die, obviously, but it would be a really interesting death. Actually, I think, yeah, Neil deGrasse Tyson has an amazing book written about it called The Death of Black... Well, Death by Black Holes. And I think it's really interesting and really awesome. So what happens when you are about to enter a black hole? these slides say, not advised, you would be spaghettified. And that is so true. So, spaghettification is, I think it's a real scientific term now, because I've seen plenty of actual astronomy scientists use it. So, what is spaghettification? So at this point, when you're crossing the event horizon, the gravitational force is so strong that it acts differently on your body. It's hard to imagine, but what happens is the gravitational pull at your feet would be much stronger than that at your head. So think of this. Try to sort of sequentially cut your body in halves. So from the torso to the down to your feet, you will experience a lot more gravitational force than you are in your upper body. So let's take this lower body, which is your legs, and split them in half too, and then half, keep on going towards your feet, splitting in half, 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 half. So that's basically what's happening. That's how exponentially the gravitational force is increasing on your body. So when you are sort of dropping into a black hole beyond the event horizon, you are being stretched out in a way. Your feet, all the matter in your feet is sort of disintegrating, it's being pulled, then reaching up to your knees, then your torso, then eventually your face. Basically, you will be spaghettified. So if you do drop into a black hole, it won't be a pretty death. It's just going to suck you up like a noodle. Let's see. Oh, and of course, there's that whole thing of time dilation. So we know from the theory of relativity, special in general, that there's something called time dilation, which means that time appears to run more slowly for a clock in a gravitational field. And it's really incredible. It's amazing to think how something so constant that we rely on every day, which is time, is basically it's a lie. well, not a lie, but it's not constant. It is varying, and it is a crazy thing. And I'm really passionate about this because I really want these things to be taught in schools, because it's crazy. It's been 100 years since, more than 100 years since Einstein came out with the theory of relativity, you know. So it's only fair that we give kids a chance to learn about these things so they can, you know, so these things come naturally to them. They become common sense. And I don't think these concepts are too hard or too scary to teach. You can always, like, there's these books that are for kids that explore these amazing concepts. Like, there's Flatlanders. I love it because it talks about these two-dimensional little squares and circles coming in contact with this three-dimensional entity. It's a fun book. So yeah, that's time dilation. Time runs differently for different people. So if I told you right now to go circle around this park, or like just run for like 3 to 4 minutes, and then come back to me, basically you would have aged lesser than me in that time frame. And the same thing goes for if you are living on the ground floor instead of me living on the top floor of a building in the penthouse, then you are in a higher gravitational field. So you will age slowly than I would. This is not at all possible. This is not at all visible in any shape or form right now, because the scales are just too small. You know, there's not enough gravitational field. You're not running nearly as close to the speed of light. But basically, if you are traveling towards the close speed of light, you will age differently, and it will fuck your head up, as they showed in, you know, what's that movie called? Interstellar. Contact was also really good. So that's time dilation, and it's really cool. So basically what happens in a black hole is there's so much gravity that theoretically you could just relive the entire history of this world in 1 second. Well, in 1 second from the outside, for you it would still be the history of the world. And you can live through the entire life that has been, because the time is going to not mean anything inside a black hole beyond an event horizon. And I think that there's one really cool concept that they always talk about, and it's how time becomes three-dimensional, and like, so basically time and space, what happens is they switch dimensions when you're in a black hole. So we all know space is 3D, time is 1D, it's always moving forward, it's, you know, entropy can never decrease, chaos only has to increase. So there's this arrow of time that is only going from the beginning of time, which is a Big Bang, just straight forward. So what happens inside of a black hole is these two physical entities, these two physical properties, they change dimensions. So time becomes 3D and space becomes one dimensional. So space, there is nothing. You're in the singularity. There's nowhere to go. Just confined to this limited one dimensional puny space. But for time, for instance, becomes 3D, which makes me think it would be really interesting, because then it means you can go forward, you can go backwards, you can even go sort of sideways, which I think is like different timelines, you know, possibilities. So yeah, all these crazy things. I think I thought they did that whole bookshelf thing in that movie Interstellar really well. It resonated with that whole time being three-dimensional as a tesseract, where you're just sort of, you know, jumping through these rooms that hold certain time period of you in your life. Really, really interesting things. Now, let's see what else. I think that's it. It was really fun making this audio. I hope you learned something of black holes, and hopefully I can get to do this more in the future. As you can tell, I just really like ranting about these things, because it's fun, you know. It's really fun to see someone get excited about something that you're so passionate about, and it's always a good talk. So that was a short intro on black holes. If you have any questions, let me know. This is Dom Bombadil signing off. And I'm really sorry if this was full of rambles. This is the first time I'm doing something like this, recording right off the bat, you know. No script, no nothing, just me talking about one particular thing into the mic and you just listening to it. So, see ya.